Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Call in number 914-338-0164. Do press 1 if you'd like to speak with us, callers. Today we're going to be doing something a little different, and that is conducting readings for each other.
Oh, yeah.
So, first, let me start with you, Neil. I think that I'm picking up someone in your life, a woman, she's mm-hmm. very beautiful, extremely talented, and witty.
That could be a number of women. Let me compile a list. I'll give it to you, but that might take a day.
I almost spit coffee all over my computer, and then you'd have to repair it for me, because I would hold you responsible for the damages.
That's not the first time I've been asked that question.
Huh?
It's not the first time I've been asked that question. That there are several talented women around me.
I didn't say several.
I said several.
I didn't. I said one.
You said one.
I was talking about one specifically.
Right. But I can't determine. I'd have to do a lot of research. Because I can't determine out of this list. I mean, already since we've spoken, there are 15 women on my written down. But, you know.
Well, we know that's not true. Okay.
You know, it's kind of fun to do readings on one another, but it's kind of worthless, too, because you know so much.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you can do face gazing.
Well, that's totally different than giving a reading. I mean, face gazing allows you to hopefully glimpse some of the past lives that the person that you're looking at has had, or the past lives that you've shared with that person,
yeah,
possibly. But, you know, interpreting what you're seeing is an entirely different ball game than just looking at a face and saying, well, you know, I see you turning into a magician or whatever it may be.
Oh, well, face gazing, you can see a lot of past lives coming out on people. You can see their astral realm.
Right.
A lot of different things you can see. But, you know, something really aggravating happened this morning.
Really?
You know, have you ever...
Here's what aggravating... The first aggravating part of what happened is that I was asleep and somehow the TV comes on and there's two loud voices talking in the room while I'm asleep. That was the first aggravation.
Yeah.
Second aggravation was after that person left the room. He then subsequently returned to the room with the other annoying voice and turned on the TV.
Well, that was because when I came into the room, there were two men in there with you, and I took one out and hit him in the head, and we both came back and got things straightened out.
They were very talented men, by the way.
Yeah, I bet you can spell. They're very talented. But, you know, you wake up in the morning, and you turn on the TV just to kind of go through those TV things. And lo and behold,
not everybody
does that.
Not
stations.
Everybody does that. Let me just preface it with this. Neil checks out these things. to make sure everything's working, actually. The reason you turn on the TV is to check to make sure the TV is operating properly.
Well,
because
that's a wise
thing. It's wise. It is wise.
Because if I didn't check, we wouldn't have known. So we have a lot.
Well, we would have known eventually. Or we would have not known because it came back on, and we would have never known.
No, wait a
problem.
Minute. You're jumping to check.
Okay,
so,
I know.
So we have a lot of channels, and two of the channels, they're separate. But CNN and Turner Classic Movies was out. Nothing else was out, just that was out on all TVs. And so you go, you call up your provider, and you have to go through this automated voice. She's asking you all kinds of questions. And now she asks you, did you ever fall down? Did you ever have any broken bones?
She
was asking all these questions.
No.
Automated thing. Were your parents divorced?
No, anyway, that's...
Took me 20 minutes to get through her questions. And every time I'd answer, I hear this clicking and she's typing something.
I know what you're talking about.
Then she finally, 20 minutes
later, like the computer searching for whatever next response
is going to be.
Yeah.
And she says, you sound like an interesting guy. Do you have an interesting woman that you live with?
She's very beautiful, immensely talented, and amazingly witty.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, you can ask her a question and there's nothing, but she can ask you questions. That might be her on the phone now. But anyways, so then she finally says, so what's your problem? Why are you calling? This is about 20 minutes later. And I tell her, so she goes, now, would you like for us to send you a message remotely? I go, no, just get me a technician. This is a robot voice. So finally, the technician comes on and he goes, and he asked me the same questions. Did you ever fall down? Did you skin your knee?
No. Okay. So then
you say, okay, there's two channels. I'm not getting two channels. He goes, two channels where? Two channels where? On the phone. I'm not getting two channels on the TV. He goes, oh.
Well, so there are channels on the phone, you know.
Well, I said five times, it's TV.
Yeah.
The robot asked me. I told her.
Right, okay.
Then he says, well, did you check to see if they're on? I go, yeah, I checked to see if they're on. He goes, oh, well, okay, well, let's see what's going on. So he starts asking me, what's your birthday? I go, birthday have to do? He goes, I wonder who I'm talking to. So I have to tell him my birthday. He goes, what's your PIN number? Then I got to tell him my PIN number. He goes, okay. So what's the problem now? Wait a minute. Do I have your permission to look into your file? I go, what? Yeah, you have my permission. No, I don't want you to look into my file. I'm just calling the breeze. So then he finally looks at my file and he says, yeah, you're supposed to have the channels. I go, I know I'm supposed to have the channels, but I don't have them. He goes, well, you're supposed to have them. They're in your lineup. I go, no, you don't understand. They're not coming up on the TV. So you go through this for a half hour.
God, these people.
And he goes, oh, did you check all your TV? No, I'm guessing. I'm guessing. And I'm just playing with you. I have nothing better to do. He goes, well, let's see. I've never heard of that one before. So he says, let me see what I can do here. So he goes, I'm going to talk to another technician. I go, what do you mean you're going to talk to it? Aren't you a technician? He goes, yeah, but I got to talk to another one about this. So he goes, can I put you on a brief hold? So he puts me on a brief hold. This stupid music comes on. I'm listening to that for a while. Then he comes back and he says, now which channels were those again? How these people? So anyways, tell him again. And he goes, you're supposed to have them. Let's try high definition. I go, we don't get this one on high definition. He goes, try channel 600. I try. Well, I'm not getting anything. There's nothing. There's nothing on these two channels. So he goes, okay, I'm going to reach out again to my tech. So he reaches out to tech. Anyways, this goes on for an hour. This stuff goes on for an hour. And he says, finally says to me, I'm going to have to create a ticket, but there's a problem. I go, why is there a problem? Because you already have a ticket for somebody to come out. I see, with your phone. I go, you're the greatest company. And, you know, the phone doesn't work, the TV doesn't work. He goes, well, I can't create two tickets. I go, you mean you can't? The company, this famous, this big company, can't create two tickets, one for the phone and one for the TV, not on the same day. I mean, it was like I was in a wonderland. And, you know, I was talking to the rabbit. So finally he says to me, that was when I came. He says, well, he goes, do you have a high definition TV? I go, yeah. He goes, well, let's go in and check that one. Like this is a game, a kids show. So that's when I came in and tried to.
Well, there was,
check it.
You came in twice.
Yeah, because he told me to come back.
Oh, you know. Irritating.
So finally, he says, I tell you what I'm going to do for you. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to create a second ticket. I go, oh, I'm so excited. This is wonderful news. So what's going to happen? He goes, well, maybe either the first technician will come out and fix both problems, or you'll have two technicians to come out. I go, oh, I want nothing more than to wait all day for two technicians to come out. He goes, well, they could come out the same day, time, you don't know. So this, it's like a comedy act, these guys. So finally, he says he's created two tickets and hang up the phone after an hour. And lo and behold, I'm going to check one more time. And the stations are on. So the topic of the show are God's cosmic jokes. Does God create jokes on us? Does he like to create jokes and get a big kick? Absolutely.
Well,
God has nothing better to do. He gets bored. So he goes, who can I pick on today? I need a good belly laugh.
Well, this is interesting that you bring that up, because this relates to a post in the Facebook feed in regarding someone's wedding and them talking, you know, they're Christian, very Christian, religious Christians, but not really conscious Christians, I would probably classify them as. Anyway, and in the Facebook feed, they said, well, you know, God's divine timing, you know, he's taking care of everything from up there, you know, as if the wedding is like at the top of God's to-do list. I mean, so it's interesting that you say that God likes to play cosmic jokes, whereas, you know, whether God gives the rat's ass you're going to get married on time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, no.
Well,
sorry.
It's funny you bring that up, because he said, now you can always call back. I go, okay. I said, well, am I going to get someone as skilled as you? If I call back?
Sarcastically.
Said, yeah. And he said, oh, no, there's even more skilled technicians than me if you call back. So sarcastically, I said, oh, does God work? I actually said this to him. I said, does God work for your company? He goes, only for the religious
station. You told me that before the show. That was actually a pretty good comeback.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But then what was funny was I said, what's a religious station? And he said, try 10-something. And I tried it, and it was blank. So God was really set up that joke.
Okay, well, you know what this is reminding me of is Regis and Kathy Lee.
Regis and Kathy Lee.
Yeah, our banter this morning. And he died.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he just died.
Yeah,
just
I know
died.
He died.
I was shocked. I mean,
did
he was 88 years old.
TV or something?
No. He may have had trouble with his TV. I don't know. I haven't spoken with him personally.
I don't know what you mean. This reminds
me. No, our conversation reminds me of the opening of the Regis and Kathy Lee show. Regis and Kelly was the later version of the show. Kelly Ripa, who replaced Kathy Lee, but they had a similar opening where they would just kind of talk about current events or whatever was going on in their lives and their homes.
Oh.
And I think it was you that told me that the favorite segment of the audience.
Oh, that's right.
Audience.
I did read that.
Yeah, remember?
Now I recall. Yeah. But I never saw the show. I didn't watch
it. You never saw the show?
No.
Never. You're kidding.
No.
Yeah, this was the way that we're talking is kind of reminiscent of.
No, I never saw a show. Regis Philbin, he He was on the millionaire thing. I watched that one, maybe once or twice.
I hated that show, but
once or twice.
Not a good show.
What I remember about Regis Philbin was when Joy Bishop had a show, and he walked off the show, and that was a big controversy. And, you know, flipping through the channels, come to think of it, I might have seen him with her, but that's nothing I would take a break and watch.
Yeah.
I might have seen them looking at me and from the TV and saying something, but I never sat and watched them.
It's sending you a personal message.
Yeah.
So cute.
Regis, yeah.
No, but you know what was funny is what's happening right now is because there's no taping, I guess, of game shows. I don't know. I think some of Hollywood is working and in some parts because we have clients in that industry and they are working, and writers, and they're still writing, but I don't know how much filming is going on. And currently, usually there's a summer break for certain shows, but Jeopardy is right now showing reruns of old shows, like from the 80s. And last night they had Celebrity Jeopardy, and Regis Philbin was on last night. And I got to, get to watch.
He answered questions.
Yeah, I mean, it was an entertaining show. Carol Burnett was another one on there. She was one of the three contestants, and then this blonde I couldn't place her, but I think she was on like some Dynasty or something. I don't know. I don't know who she is. I don't know who she was. Gave a first name, and
you
didn't recognize her because I didn't watch the show.
I did a reading for somebody in the family, the Carol Burnett family. I won't mention who.
I won't mention that she was a daughter or any other.
No. I won't mention any names. But I did a reading for someone in the Carol Burnett family. And so I did that reading.
Well, in fact, she was connected to a woman that died recently that was a client and friend.
Yeah.
They were connected. Yeah.
So then I went. After that reading, I went to the Pasadena Playhouse, you see, and I went to see a play there, and there was a painting of a woman on the wall, and I was waiting to be seated. I was staring at this painting of the woman on the wall, and it started to talk to me, and I thought, my God, I'm hearing this woman's voice. I couldn't.
Did you forget to take your phenobarbital
that day? No, I took that and a little bit of LSD. But the,
I don't think interact well.
No, they do with me. But so the painting started to talk. It was like an eerie voiceover narration, kind of eerie and not just talking somewhat nonsense, but saying my name. So I'm staring at this painting, and one of the ushers comes up, walks by me, and I go, "Hey, who is that woman?" And he said, "Oh, that's so and so. That's who the theater is named after." I go, "Oh." He goes, "Yeah, that was Carol Burnett's daughter." And I went, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, that was Carol Burnett's daughter. The theater is named after her." And I was like stunned. I mean, I'm a psychic, and so I'm used to this stuff. But still, I can be thrown around too. And so so there it was. Now, so I did a reading for somebody in the family. Then after that, unrelated to the reading, I go to this Pasadena Playhouse, and I'm looking at this painting it's a painting, oil painting, and it happens to be Carol Burnett's daughter. And, I told the manager that, I kind of mentioned a few things to the manager, kind of hoping he'd give me a free seat. It didn't work. And he just kind of looked at me. I was nuts anyways. I think instead of a free seat, he had his usher kind of keep watching me. He thought maybe I'd disturb the performance or something. Because you can't say, "Oh, I did a reading for somebody in the family, and that painting's talking to me." I mean, then I thought to myself, I sound like I'm nut. So he looked at me like I was crazy. He kind of went, "Oh, good for you." And he walked away. You mentioned Carol Burnett. Now, Regis Philbin, I wouldn't think he'd do good on Jeopardy. I mean, I just don't know.
Well, the questions, I mean, the questions were, when they do Celebrity Jeopardy, questions are not like, they're not tailored toward, you know, intellectuals, so to
speak. Is that the show where they go, like, who is Bishop? His name is Bishop, and he goes, who is Joey?
Well, not exactly. They would say blah, 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 blah. You know, they give the question. It's an agricultural region in Chile, and it's known for this. What is blah, blah, blank?
So what kind of questions would they ask Regis Philbin?
Well, they were asking all the contestants, not just Regis. There was a board up, and they had show business, music. I mean, I was getting all the answers. I can be good at Jeopardy and I can be bad at Jeopardy. You know, you have to have very wide breadth of knowledge. And so Jeopardy has questions in many, many different categories. So, you know, you can have geology and then you can have opera, you know, in the same game. So if you don't have a wide breadth of knowledge, then, you know, you're not going to do well.
So did he do well?
He did. I didn't finish watching the show, but he was behind and then started to come forward. But, you know, there was also the element of them being entertainers on the show. You know, they're being funny and, you know, there was interaction.
Well, you know, he had a joke on Joy Bishop. I mean, Joy Bishop died before Regis was successful. But the reason Joy Bishop severed Regis Philbin from the show was because the ratings were low and they blamed it on Regis Philbin. So Joey Bishop said, I'm going to have to slice you from the show. My ratings are too low for you to keep you on. And that's when Regis Philbin said, well, I'm walking off. But now Regis Philbin gathers more hours than any other person on TV or network TV or something. He's got a record for being on accumulating more hours than any other person on television and having as much success. So he really skyrocketed in his career. I do know that from the article. But you see, that's just it. When we get into it, now we could look at Richard Simmons and go, well, maybe he's gone through karma. And then suddenly he passes through karma. He's on some kind of cycle or multiple, and he transcends into a higher zone. Now, we're all supposed to do that. We're all down here struggling through karma, all this crap we brought into the world with us from our past lives. Now have the burden of getting through it in the best way we can and reducing it. Finally, the bell rings, and we're supposed to cross over into our higher journey. For Regis Philbin, obviously, it was a higher journey. He really...
You'd ask to look at a recent picture.
Oh, yeah.
You look so good.
No, but he's 88, I think.
He was 88. I mean, he was fairly active. I don't know when he was last on the air. I'm trying to figure it out here. But anyway, he was compounded 29/11 too.
Yeah. So if I had divorces.
I don't know. I think that he was, he had one divorce, but he stayed his second marriage. He was married from 1970 until the time he died.
Yeah.
So that's a long, I mean, yes, divorce, but
well,
that's
I mean,
a long-term marriage.
I don't know whether it was tragedies there were in his life. He certainly had
50
you know,
something
there
years
would have been something
marriage.
Designating his success. There would have been some form of aid in his energy.
Yeah, he was born in August.
Oh, so that explains that one and for him. So what we have is that all of us, on the planet.
We all have it.
We all have karma.
We all do.
We all have to work through this stuff.
Yes, we
and
do.
And if we're lucky, we get to, in one lifetime,
be on Jeopardy.
Be on Jeopardy, yeah. Or
host our own show.
Call into the Neil and Kristen
Baker
Psychic Hour show and get a question answered. We got a lineup of people. Hold on.
Don't make me spit.
I'm
going to spit all over
my
computer. Stop it.
But that's the storyline in terms of where we... One, have these great leaps into success from failure or misery or complications. And then two, how sometimes we think God has disconnected from us.
Well, I thought we were talking about God's cosmic
jokes. Yeah, so I'm bringing it back.
Well, okay. Yeah.
I mean, even...
But I mean, Go ahead.
A lot of times, you know, the Jews leaving Egypt, you know, where are you, God? Where are you? What's going on? Then he says, he doesn't say anything. Then Moses is at the Red Sea, and they're going, what do we do now? The Egyptians are coming. And Moses says, don't underestimate God. He's probably thinking out of the corner of his lips, God, where are you? Come on, let's get going. Then suddenly the Red Sea parts. Who knows if it was a tide or the sea literally parted. And then there was that sense of abandonment. Christ on the cross, he's saying, what's going on here? I'm on here too long. Where are you? We're disconnected. There's another disconnect. I mean, there's connections all over the place. And I'm sure during times of personal grief, people say, where is God? Where is God? Where is God? God disconnects. We think supposedly he disconnects. Obviously, he does to some extent disconnect. I say he, I don't mean power, supreme being, creator.
Well, yeah, I guess God isn't really, there's
what
no
is
gender,
it, you know?
No gender really associated with God, even though we, you know, typically call them
God.
A guy.
Well, then we get to this idea that the TV disconnects and then it comes back on. Well, is that an analogy or something that, well, here we have this little stupid episode that the TV's not working or the channels aren't working, and then suddenly it comes back on unexpectedly. And it comes back on when I just sort of, you know, and then what is the action? I think what God does is he thinks, okay, here's what I'm going to do with these human beings. I'm going to disconnect and see what they do with it. I want to see what kind of faith they have and how they sustain themselves over time. Now, I didn't do too good. I'm yelling, I'm screaming. I got the guy on the phone. I'm, you know, being sarcastic. So probably God's thinking, ugh, not too good today, Neil. But now I'm trying to retrieve and rebalance and say that there is probably a good reason behind God's so-called abandonment or disconnection, because it really, that's our test of faith. We have the test of faith going on. We have to determine how long. We hope it's only an hour, a minute, more or less 40 years wandering around the desert. You have to kind of test who you are as a person. We have a lot of clients who, as soon as they're abandoned by so-called God or angels, they freak out. Others just kind of get laid back. They're okay. It all depends on what kind of human being you are, not to judge, but, you know, we come in different varieties. But I think that is a pertinent topic to relate to, because it does, ultimately, we are not separated from God. Because we are created. So some people just say, look, God created us and he left town. It's up to us. Other people say, well, he's here with us. Other people say, well, he sent a crew of angels to kind of watch over the planet. Other people say, there's no God. We're created out of dust. We were watching a show yesterday about how the planets were formed. And maybe at the edge of our solar system, billions of miles away from the sun, there's this a planet 9 that they think might have life on it, and the scientists are talking about it, trying to figure out, you know, who lives on the planet, if it's possible. Maybe the creatures live in space itself, and it's a different concept. It's not a solid, but we're constantly searching. We haven't found life yet. But yet we're compelled to find it. We haven't found God yet. I mean, some people will say we found God, but we haven't really found him. He wasn't on the Regis Philbin show, as far as I'm concerned. Or I didn't watch the show. Maybe he didn't make an appearance. Did he? I don't know.
A couple.
I don't know. He could have been.
A couple. We have a caller.
Okay, let's get to the caller.
Yeah. Hi. Caller 954, you're on the air. They hung up.
See, that was God.
Yeah.
That was God.
That is hilarious.
No, that's true.
Are we not audible? No, they were audible. I don't know what the heck
so
that was about.
God works in strange and mysterious ways, but so that Groucho Marx.
Okay.
So we have silence.
And patience.
Silence.
People sometimes
silence,
need
silence.
To be more patient.
There's a movie called Silence, great foreign film.
But, you know, getting back to the topic of whether God is, you know, I there was another client who talked about, you know, something regarding her. I can't remember the exact dialogue, but it was something about her grandparents and that, you know, one was dying and God was arranging something. You know, he was scheming up in heaven so they could, you know, meet. I don't remember what it was because one of the grandparents is now deceased, but one is alive. But there was something going on, and I don't recall, unfortunately, the exact details. However, I mean, it was ridiculous. So, you know, God may abandon us and test our faith, but God isn't just, you know, creating these little, you know, situations for us and saying, well, wouldn't it be neat if we put this person together with this person? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I'm not sure how, in what minute detail God works. If God is in everything, then he's, you know, a leaf fell from the tree. Oh, God did that. You know, you scratch your head and you pull out a hair. Oh, God did that. Everything God did this. You know, maybe it all centers down to...
That's what I'm going to... Next time something goes wrong, that's what I'm going to say. God did it.
Yeah.
That will be my excuse.
You know, John Lennon, the way he met Yoko Ono,
the whole painting...
Is that he climbed this ladder. There was an art show going on. He climbed this ladder. He looked in this... telescope, and he saw the word yes, and he just fell in love with her because he thought that was brilliant. I don't know, that's what I read, but it brings up another question about a show you watch, which just may be created by God. Say Yes to the Dress. Now that's ridiculous. Now here's this gay guy that's obviously he's a flamboyant gay guy. And he goes Google over all the women and picking up the dress, and the show I've watched a couple of times because you've watched it. I've tried to sit through it, and you know I find it amusing. But I mean I wouldn't say it's my lineup of classics.
Well, I wouldn't say it's my lineup of classics either. Let me please defend myself because you're insulting the show, which is not. I mean. There's nothing intelligent about it whatsoever, but if you like fashion and you like wedding dresses, it's a mindless hour. It's a mindless hour. I like looking at the dresses. I think it's amusing to listen to the woman's stories. Sometimes
they tell stories.
And the families, it's kind of interesting to watch the families and how they interact with one another, the drama. I'm sure there's a lot that's staged. But anyway, the dresses are real.
The dresses
and I
are
like
real.
Dresses.
And then this
I like
guy,
dresses. I like wedding dresses. What can I say?
A real gay guy with big glasses and everything.
Randy Panucci.
He's talking about... And then they usually have, no offense, but they usually have these big obese brides-to-be, and they're fitting
always.
Them into these tight dresses. And she's going, you know, I don't like the way the fat's going over the material. Then the mother, then they have, on the show, they have the mother and the kids and the father.
Right, there's
not
the family.
Father, the mother.
Sometimes
kids.
The father's on.
Oh, sometimes the
yeah,
father.
Sometimes
and then the mother says,
on.
Darling, I don't want, your breasts are showing. I don't want that on. I'm going to drop dead if you walk down the aisle in that. And they're all looking, and then the camera's going on everybody's faces, and then the woman starts crying, you've always treated me. And, you know, and then Randy's looking at the camera going, I've never seen anything like this happen before. And so you watch an hour of this while they're trying on different dresses. And then Randy's assistant comes in, what about this one? And then they're talking about that dress. And I don't know, it's an hour of this. Then suddenly the climax. Are you saying yes to the dress?
I know it's...
Then, yeah, you say, yeah, and I've looked over many times and seen Kristen wiping tears from her eyes.
You're so full of shit.
With a prayer book and a shawl over my head. You know.
And I've looked. You've shed a few tears over Randy.
I shed tears over Randy?
Yeah.
When did I shed tears over Randy?
There's been dramatic moments. He's poured his heart out on the show, and you've been moved.
I might have. Yeah, I might have. Oh, I don't remember that. But I'm a sentimental guy. One time I cried because Bugs Bunny couldn't find a carrot, and I was in tears for days. But the idea that say yes to the dress. Well, there's a rhyme.
You know what?
There's
a new season going on too. That reminds me. Thank you. I think they're starting a new season.
But oh well, great! I can't wait. But you know, Randy in that show, Randy's like God. He's trying to arrange. He's trying to find the perfect dress, and he's sweating. He's going through all this commotion. The people are stumbling all over all these dresses, and some of the women are like, they can't take their eyes off the mirror. They keep looking at the dress. They go into the history. And then Randy's supposed to save the day with the dress. But it's kind of a metaphor because we somewhat stumble through life trying to figure out why we're here. What are we supposed to do?
To buy the dress.
Buy the dress.
That's why. To say yes to the dress.
Well, thank God I'm not in the dresses right now. Maybe I'm down here for the wrong reason.
Maybe.
But then a lot of times once you get what you want, you're still not happy. So I don't know how much there's a certain where we, a lot of us humans, we strive for a goal. And then when we get it, we may feel satisfaction and few of us can cross over and say, I've done it all.
But then we want, usually it diminishes the happiness or the feeling of success diminishes, and then it's on to the next goal. That's true.
And then some of us have so much to live for. Robin Williams and this David Foster Wallace, who did Infinite Jest, a brilliant writer. He was a teacher, hung himself, depression, alcohol problems. Whatever it may be, there's something wrong with the brain, they're deteriorating. But, you know, when you read about all these people who have been successful, who have attained success and fame, and they're not happy inside. And God knows I've done a lot of readings with famous people, and I'm astonished at how depressed they are in a reading. They're not happy. They're struggling. They're not happy. It's amazing. It's amazing the front that people give to the world, and then inside the turmoil that's going on. But I think, you know,
well, especially when you have to play a role, you know, when you're famous, you have to, there's an image that has to be projected. And oftentimes that image is two dimensional. It doesn't really encompass the full breadth of who the person is inside.
Yeah.
So that's challenging.
We have contrasting faces. You know, when we look at some of these child stars that end up committing suicide and they just destroy their lives because they were so adored and honored in their childhood, and then they're typecast and they can't find work. I had the encounter to meet the guy that played Dennis the Menace, Jay North, and when I met him, he wasn't happy. He just wasn't happy. And a lot of people were trying to help him through his misery. I think a lot of this, I'm not divulging any secrets.
Well, he's not alive.
He's alive. Jay North is alive.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you are divulging secrets. Then.
But, you know, Dennis the Menace, it's weird. Because Dennis the Menace was a comic I read all the time. Then I saw
I love that comic.
That they had the Dennis the Menace show going on, and they showed a picture of Dennis the Menace with a slingshot.
Yeah, he's alive.
Yeah, he's alive. He's around my age.
Yeah.
And then I saw Dennis the Menace with a slingshot, and I thought, oh my God, that doesn't look like Dennis the Menace in the comics. But I was obsessed with watching that show, and then years and years later, I'm talking to him face to face at a party. And I can't believe who I'm looking at, because he had gained a lot of weight and he was, you know, had a lot of problems and just all kinds of things. I don't know what, I don't want to say too much about his personal life if it's not already known on the internet.
Then don't.
But yeah, and here I'm looking at this guy, and not only did he not look different from the comic strip as he did in the TV show, but now from the TV show, I'm looking at somebody I wouldn't even know and having all this angst and describing what it was to be a child actor and things like that. Well, you know, I think inside, I think it's very important that we have a strong foundation about who we are, so that no matter what goes on, like Job, we have a strong sense of self and a strong sense of God and a strong sense of the foundation of existence. Well, you know, on this planet, there's not going to be any promised presence, and presence can be automatically taken away as well. So what are we really here for? What is the essence of our life?
I'm sorry, let me interject, Neil, because what I have to say is extremely important. The essence of life is to be on the phone with not only Frontier, but any other company that represents you and that you transact with in the business world.
I agree.
And this is how you spent your morning. And yeah, this is it. This is the most important thing.
You know, when Edison created the phone.
Now we have Southern California Edison. There you go.
In Southern California Edison, he was known to say, and I hope everybody has a massive headache over my invention. It was one of the famous words that he gave before he crossed over. But it's funny because think about the phone, what the phone does, that dreaded phone call that rings, you know, that we fear, a phone call in the middle of the night, or the phone call that just makes us leap for joy. This phone has a lot of power. I mean, today you're walking around with phones, but the way I grew up, there was a phone to the house and that's all you had. And a phone ring, it has so many, the ring itself communicates to us. It's a communication form. It's just a sound.
My phone is always on silent.
Oh, it is?
Yes. I don't ever have it on. Never.
What's the point of that?
Well, if someone wants to talk to me that badly, they'll leave a voicemail. I don't answer the phone.
Well, they didn't, you know, they didn't have voicemails when I was a kid.
And right.
Then they had this recording you had to set up.
Right, the answering machine, the old-fashioned answering machine. Those were so exciting when those came out. Very novel.
And my tape would go, blah, 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 and I never knew who was talking because the tape would be dysfunctional. And then they came out with these handphones. They were like 3 feet big, and you walk around with them. But you can only go out a certain range.
Oh, the large cordless phones.
Things. Then they came out, and now you have little phones and
cell phones and stuff like that.
But getting back to the idea of what a ring, you know, the communication of sound. We don't always have to hear words and sound, just like we were talking about the painting. A ring on a phone can mean so much to us, especially if we're anticipating something.
Well, yeah, and in fact, with cell phones and probably some cordless phones that are attached to landlines, you can set ringtones for specific people that you're, you know, like if I could set a ringtone for Neil, so I would know that it was you calling.
No, really?
I believe you can do that. Yeah, I mean, I haven't ever done that on my phone, but I believe you have the capability to do that.
You know, when I first got my cell phone, I really didn't know how it worked.
You still don't.
I still know how it works.
You don't even use a cell phone.
I put it in my pocket.
You pay for a cell phone that you don't use.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm the most mechanic. No, forget it. I understand the concepts, But I no. don't ask. If yeah, I'm going to fix something, I wave my hand over it. I put out power, and it works. I don't know else how to do it. But I had the cell phone I got. Okay. So I'm walking around, and every once in a while, I start to hear music. I'm thinking, where's that music from? I think, gosh, I'm becoming so psychic. The notes are so beautiful. It, you know, and now I'm walking around saying, oh, I see, I hear you, angels, I hear you. And I'd hear this elaborate music, and then it would stop. And then I'd be walking around, and I'd hear it again. I go, oh, yep. You know, those are the angels. They're talking to me. Then finally, it happened in front of somebody, and I go, they go, oh, are you going to answer your phone? I go, what? What phone? He goes, oh, your phone's ringing. I go, what phone? He goes, don't you hear the music? I go, you hear the music? He goes, yeah, I hear the music. That's your phone. I go, no, those are angels. He goes, no, those aren't angels. You have a cell phone. Someone's trying to call you. I went, what? What? And he goes, yeah, where's your cell phone? It sounds like it's coming from your pocket. So I take out my cell phone, and sure enough, the first time I ever realized that this music was coming from my cell phone. And of course, the guy said, you are kidding me. Oh, yeah, I'm kidding you. But I never realized, didn't take me a half hour to understand how to open up the latch on the cell phone. But, you know, I didn't know, that I guess it was set to a music. I didn't set it. It was automatically set to some kind of music. And then I realized that I wasn't hearing God at all. That was
my cell phone.
And then I went to great despair.
Right.
Stopped believing in God. Became an atheist. And traveled around the world looking for an answer. Didn't find one, but came back and bought a new failed cell phone because that one had the batteries had run out.
So it was back when you traveled, now that we have no travels,
yeah.
Sadly.
Well, you know.
Which is making me an atheist.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting because what it really, when you define, I mean, an atheist really doesn't have a definition because how can you not believe in something and then call yourself something?
There's a lot of people that would identify more as being agnostic because it gives some room for error. Well, you know, I don't necessarily believe there's not a God, but I don't necessarily believe there is.
Yeah, my
one.
Mother was a, I would say, do you believe in God? She'd go, well, like 5 minutes. Well, you know what? I'm agnostic. You know, it took her 5 minutes to figure it out. But what was she doing? She's thinking, well, okay, so there might be a God. I'm thinking about there could be a God. No, there isn't a God. But I don't know. I'm on the fence. Some people, and then some people say, okay, if there's a God and you really want me to believe, make this table turn upside down. They want to see a sign and wonder.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you can do it by command.
Well, I mean, we have several people we know that try to command God to produce a result that they want in order for them to believe. With this, and these are people that have had proof many, many times over, and have had validations, but the faith is like, you know, I mean, it's very limited.
Yeah,
so
there's people struggle in their terminology of God and trying to, you know, and feeling that there has to be a God. And if there is a God, then a God produces good things and not bad things. But I don't know.
Well,
look
what God produced.
The world,
yeah, look at the Bible and what's been produced in the Bible.
Look at that. He screwed up. He screwed up at the very beginning. Here he makes his garden. He puts two people in
it. I don't know if he screwed up. It was planned.
Well, what
I
I'm
think.
Saying, yeah,
I know what you're saying.
It was planned. It was predestined. You see, that's the idea. Is God a sly fox? I'm going to create two people. Then I'm going to put in two trees. I'm going to tell them not to touch them. Then I'm going to have them touch them. Then I'm going to send them out of the Garden of Eden. And then we'll have the certain serpent come in. And then I'm going to curse them. Oh, God, this is great. Then they're going to have a kid. And then I'm going to curse the kid. I'm going to have the two brothers, one kill the other. Oh, this is perfect. You know, you kind of think, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing this? I have nothing better to do, but this is a good plan. Wait till you see what happens. Diego, what's going to happen? I'm going to destroy Earth. I'm going to have an Antichrist come in. Everyone's going to do a 666. There's going to be a big battle of Armageddon. So a lot of people will say, God is nuts. He's crazy. Why can't he just jump to the chase and create a perfect world? Why does he have, I don't know why. I mean, I've asked, I don't even know if God knows why. Who knows what the backside of God is?
The backside of God.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to know.
I try to examine the backside of God in a book.
Yeah, that's true.
Came up with the man stalker, I don't know. What is God's intentions? And then according to the Bible, once he has created this new world and Armageddon is over, then there's going to be 1,000 years where Christ is supposed to reign on the earth, and then he lets Satan out for a little season.
Salt and pepper?
A little season. I don't know what the little seasons. I think all the seasons.
Or is it like a sub-season? Yeah, is it a sub-season?
A little season.
Maybe it's a poor translation.
I used to think summer was a little season because it was only 2 months you got out of school. Maybe he's going to do it during summer.
Oh, God,
vacation.
Summer feels like the longest season to me.
But then he lets them out again, and then there's another war, and then it's okay. And then it kind of just...
Well, it's not really okay. It doesn't end, and it just all kind of like start over again.
Well, I wrote that it starts all over again, but according to the Bible, then there's a new heaven, and everything's great, and everybody lives forever, and all the tears are wiped away, and everything happens according to that narration in that book.
In the Bible book.
I don't know. We all finally have to come to the conclusion that while we're on the planet doing everything we're going to do, there's a shift and there's a cliff and we drop. We all die. And I don't know. You don't know when you're going. Some people know when they're going to die. Mark Twain knew he was going to die when Halley's Comet came. He said he would, and he did. Some people know when they're going to die. Christ knew he was going to die. And there's several others, but for the most of us, we don't know when. We just don't know when. The only thing we can assume is, what's the age? I'll live to be 80. If I'm lucky, I'll die in bed. Didn't Regis Philbin die in bed?
I don't know. He didn't have any outstanding illness or anything. They say he died of natural causes.
So when you get up into your 80s, you have to start saying, it could be any day. You get up to your 90s, it could be any minute. But then what happens? I was reading this article that we are all, every human being for about a minute becomes totally aware that they have died. Meaning that when they die, they see their body. They know it's happened. I kind of believe that.
I was thinking about near-death experiences and what people go through when they have these experiences where they die and then come back. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if someone, actually could die and spend a considerable time dead and come back and relay the experience of what it's like, because all these near-death experiences have similar experiences as far as what they feel. There's a great white light, they see their family members, it feels great to be out of the body and everything like this. And so that means that they've gone to heaven, according to people that have had these near-death experiences. This is what the conclusion usually is that is heaven. However, we don't have anything to base death on, because there's no one that's been really dead that can come back and explain what being dead is like.
You know, I mean, some people are resuscitated from dying.
Resuscitated.
But they you know, they don't remember anything.
Yeah, but being resuscitated is not being dead for like an extended period.
Some people say you see a light.
People that are resuscitated, even if they're dead for a couple hours and then are resuscitated, have these similar experiences. There's many books about near-death experiences. Well, I mean, that is only a limited glimpse into what actually happens after someone is dead. And of course, there's going to be a relief when you're out of the physical body. Of course, well, you're going to feel the lifting of the burden of the physical body, especially if the body was in pain right prior to death. But it doesn't mean that just because you see a light and see your family members that you're in heaven.
No.
Quite the contrary.
Whether you have an extension of consciousness or consciousness follows you into the afterlife and becomes part of your cosmic soul, that's what I believe. I think consciousness is collected into the soul. And that's what we take with us. And our consciousness embodies our works and everything we've done. So that's part of the DNA, if you will, of the soul. And that's what follows us. So when we cross over and we leave our bodies behind, it's sort of like a cocoon. In terms of metamorphosis, you leave the shell behind, but the new creature and the new consciousness is now in a new body. So you look at the old body, there's nothing there, but yet what was there has been evolved into something that is now new and different.
Right. So the phase in which that new life has entered into is extremely preliminary. I mean, I haven't done an immense amount of reading on near-death experiences, a little bit, but I don't think there's anything I've come across that talks about a judgment or anybody greeting guides and then, you know, raked over the coals about what was done wrong in life and praised about what was done right. And then you reassimilating that into a new life or what's going to happen in the astral realm forthcoming. I don't think there's anything about that. And we know that you know, if you believe in karma and past lives, that, you know, if you're going into a room where there's judgment and an evaluation of the soul, then that has to happen before you either return to the planet or go into a different area of the astral realm to be educated and to work on the soul before it returns to the planet or subsequently ascends. Near-death experiences don't talk about that. They just talk about a white light and family members, essentially. So, I should read up a little bit.
Being a lover of animals and insects and all forms of life and having the advantage
of speaking to them.
I've asked butterflies if they remember their former life. And all of them have said, do I ever. They remember their life as a worm. They have told me verbatim what their life was as a worm. They retain that energy. They know they used to be a worm. And they told me about their adventures and all kinds of things. But I've taken it to heart that we do retain our memory. Some of us even know where we were in a past life, but we do retain our memory. We have memories of when we were babies and little kids, but we aren't that anymore. We've morphed into something. Our consciousness just keeps going.
Well, yeah, and there'd be people of different consciousness. Higher consciousness are going to remember more details about past lives than someone who's of a lower consciousness and believes that life is on a linear scale. But when we're talking about just near-death experiences, I've yet to come across anyone talking about going into a room of judgment, and probably a soul that is going to come back into the body won't even reach that stage because the soul is coming back into the body and hasn't gotten to that you know, isn't really dead.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we're back on the air actually Saturday this week, 10 a.m.
Oh, Saturday?
Yeah.
Oh, 10 o'clock. Yeah.
Yeah. 10 a.m. We hope that we speak with some of you then. Bye.